This is Stan Collymore.
And you are listening to the V2 Football Podcast.
I'm your host, Anthony Kendrick, and I'm delighted to be joined by Richard Hero Hudson.
Good evening.
And Shane Lees.
Why am I never first? I feel like I should be first.
All right. And tonight I'm joined by Shane Lees.
Hello.
And Richard Hero Hudson.
Good evening again.
Great hosting job in my absence last week, Richard, I have to say.
I'll take that, thank you.
Yeah, no, it was genuinely, really, really enjoyed listening to the two shows. I just thought I'd get that in there on the record. Start with the opening stories of the week. Normally we do funny stories, but because of the way the news has fell, they're not going to be so funny this week. And we'll start with the delightful news that Joey Barton's got an 18-month ban for betting misconduct. What do you guys think about it? Do you think, the FA rules in general and the punishment, do you think it's fair or...?
I'll let Shane go on this first.
I don't think it's fair. No, not at all. I think it's very harsh, especially when you see it was established without any doubt that he'd never bet on something that he could influence.
Mm-hmm.
So it is basically the equivalent of him betting on Bazooka.
Right.
I don't see why... I can get why they say it's unethical and football players, and I can get why they say it's against the rules. I can get why he'd be punished for it. I can understand all of that. 18 months ban, which I think is being reduced to a year, it just seems extreme. If you consider like what people get done for when it meant being racist on the pitch, elbowing, biting, all that kind of stuff, it's nothing compared to this. And that stuff actually has some kind of consequence, not only on the game, but on the integrity of the sport. What Joey Barton did was place bets on stuff he wasn't involved in. I mean,
he wasn't involved in form.
Yeah, no, but he wasn't able to influence the results in any way. Like, you can put it this way. If he had a bet on himself to miss a penalty, and he gets a penalty, he can influence that. If he put a bet on himself to score a penalty, and then he gets a penalty, he can't influence that. Because he can try and score, but the keeper might say that he might miss by accident. You don't have as much control.
He bet on himself to be first goal scorer.
Sanvas to score.
Hmm?
And I believe that he made the pass to Sanvas.
Was that on his own team?
Yeah.
Right, okay. So he got his team a goal. Which part was he doing wrong there?
Well, the first goal scorer was his bet, and he laid on the ball to the first goal scorer.
So he should have passed to someone else?
Could have done. He could have like not done a pass earlier on in the game that could have scored a goal.
This is my point. It's not like it's, you know, like we've had in the cricket in recent years, where it's stuff that's influencing the game and they're having to really change how the game could have gone or do things that would be detrimental to their team or the sport. I think I can understand why he's being punished for it, and I do think they need to try and step out. You're betting within the sport in terms of actual within the players and the corruption and everything. I think the punishment does not fit the crime. I think it's because it's Joey Barton that's played a big part of it. And yeah, I can't see how 18 months is fair when you compare it to what other players have got for other kinds of offences. It doesn't seem at all right to me. I think what he said if they were really serious about trying to tackle betting, what they need to do is disentangle football from the betting industry. Because before every single game you watch on live TV, there's a betting ad. I thought the things he said about that were actually very concise and accurate, to be honest. Because it's one thing saying we don't want this in the sport, but then it's another thing for the Premier League, the FA, all of them, to not only endorse it, but actually encourage them to be sponsored. I think it's a massive hypocrisy.
And every time you see a post-match interview, like with they always have this, like the sponsors behind, there's always one betting company on that board that the managers are in front of.
I think that's such a gross hypocrisy, isn't it?
And you look back at the sort of the bets that Barton had. On his website, the 30 most pertinent ones. Now, of those 30 most pertinent ones, he actually only won 3 bets.
But yeah, it's not like he was even making considerable profit from it. I mean, you could say a footballer shouldn't be able to bet on other games that he's not related to because being a footballer, you know other footballers, and you can maybe have that influence. That's how it tends to work in other sports where they do have quite rife corruption. You know, in cricket, it's never really a case of, you know, one of the people who's trying to corrupt it is making contact directly with the person. It's normally through someone else they've already got a relationship with. So you could understand why they don't want that to happen at all. No betting on any of the games. But that's not the point in all this. I think that's kind of... People are going, oh, but he did something wrong and therefore he should be punished. Yes, of course he should. And it was right for them to punish him. 18 months ban, essentially saying go and retire Joey Barton is not at all justified. It's not at all relative to the crime. That's the whole point of justice within any crime, whether or not we're talking through a proper legal institution like the government or through the FA, is it supposed to be relative. I think what's happened here is they've gone, it's Joey Barton, and it'll probably be better for the game if he's out of it than if he's in it.
Do you think having such a strict ban, though, is good to, you know, deter other footballers if they're thinking of having a bet? You know, it might make them think even more than if it was, say, a month ban or a shorter ban. I'm not sure what sort of ban you think is a reasonable punishment.
No, I wouldn't say it's actually a deterrence, because a deterrence is based upon somebody applying logical and rational principles to whatever they're doing. A bet is inherently illogical. It's inherently an irrational thing to do. You're throwing money at something that might gain you absolutely nothing. In fact, it might lose you things. There's no real logic to it when you're talking about games of chance, and that's essentially what it is. So I think when you're looking at it, if you really want to have a deterrent, you need better education. You do need to disentangle the betting industry from the football industry. That has to be... They really have to start disconnecting that. And if you're trying to avoid players from doing it, again, you're talking about people who aren't that smart, who are not really thinking about what they're doing when they're doing it. They're just doing it. They've just gone, oh, game's on, I'll have a bet. It's the same thing plenty of us do when we're doing bets. We don't really think too much about it. We don't think about the fiver we're spending. We just go, yeah, this is something to do whilst I'm watching this. Mm-hmm. And so I think if you actually want to get rid of it, this kind of effort in, you know, we'll make an example and then it's a deterrent, it just completely misunderstands what betting is. Mm-hmm. So it's not, we're not giving them nuclear weapons and saying, well, that's an effective deterrent, which it is. We're talking about going, it's like saying, oh, we'll punish them. We've kind of established most of modern world that if you throw all the drug addicts in prison, all they do is do more drugs in prison and get out, and then they still can't get jobs because now they're ex-cons and they do even more drugs afterwards. In fact, they just know more people in the drug business. We know this doesn't really work, because it's something that's based around being irrational, doing things out of some kind of primal desire. So we know that rationality, which is what a deterrence is dependent upon, doesn't actually apply. So yeah, I think the whole thing's a bit of a farce, really.
Mm-hmm. What about the well, other...
Lots of the rules that came in, well, a lot of the things that he's been found guilty of as well, was sort of prior to when they did the big clampdown on betting 3 years ago. So mm-hmm. I think it's a bit harsh to pull him up on things that at the time weren't actually an offence.
Mm-hmm. No, I completely agree. It's a bit like, for people who are saying, oh no, I think that's actually okay, I'll put it this way, our government, when they change tax laws, can make fair tax laws relevant to things you were doing several years before that, before those things were tax laws, and then go after your money that way. And I think pretty much it's unanimously agreed, that ain't quite right. So I think we can also agree on the same thing here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, it's a difficult one, I think. I think with Joey Barton as well, I think he's admitted as well he has a gambling. He's got a problem with gambling. So he's put 15,000 bets on in total, not just football, but on various other sports. So yeah, you know, I think there's another point to raise about whether the FA should be doing more to help players. And I think Joey's said that himself. But yeah, no, in general, I think part of it as well, the reaction will be whether people like Joey Barton or not. Personally, I quite like him. I follow him on Twitter and that, and I do respect his views. But there's a lot of people out there who don't and just dislike him as a person. And, you know, I think for a lot of people, that will decide their views on this matter.
I personally think he's a knob, and I don't really like him. But I think his whole thing of being an intellectual footballer is kind of, well, bullshit. He's not actually very smart at all. He just can kind of talk about subjects. He's like Russell Brand. You listen to him for 5 minutes and go, yeah, actually, maybe he's got something. You listen to him for an hour and go, Christ, no, he really doesn't. But at the same time, the character is irrelevant. The person is irrelevant. And I know a lot of people don't have that same mentality as the actions, and it's the consequences of those actions. It's a bit like Donald Trump. Everyone hates everything Donald Trump's doing because Donald Trump's doing it. But some of the stuff in isolation isn't that bad, but because it's him doing it, everyone hates it. It's the mm-hmm. same situation with Joey Barton. And I don't think he should be damned being a dick.
Okay.
I think a lot of people remember the incident with the cigar, and that will always tarnish him.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Going on to another idiot then. Well, some people think he's an idiot. David Moyes has been charged for threatening to slap Vicky Sparks, a reporter. He said that she still might get a slap even though she's a woman after a tough series of questions. Do you think he deserves a charge or not?
No, this is another great example. Just wanting to do something for the sake of doing something. I mean, if we're going into the story in a bit more depth, he apologised to the reporter. The reporter accepted the apology, and that was kind of seen to be that, because he realised what he said may have been kind of out of line. Now, personally, I don't think what he said was massively out of line, because, again, there's also the whole point of if he had said that to a bloke, no one would have given a shit. This is the kind of whole thing of, I think we're almost going to the point, you know, feminism, or we're trying to avoid sexism so much so that we're now no longer being egalitarian. We're not focusing on equality at all. We're now making exceptions. I think that's the entire opposite of what I know feminism is supposed to be. But even if we go to the side there, he apologised, she accepted it. Why can't we ever just have things left between private people? You know, it's a private issue between two individuals who have buried the hatchet. It's all done. It's all resolved. Why do you think we need to get involved now? If he had not apologised or stuck by his guns and said, no, what I said was absolutely fine, I ain't even going to say anything against it. But okay, you've got a basis of going, well, maybe it wasn't quite right. But I think this is just them sticking their oar in, because frankly, the FA is a joke, and they know most people think the FA is a joke, and so they kind of need to feel like they've got to justify their own existence and make themselves seem a bit more relevant and authoritarian. Every single time they do something like this, it makes them seem even less so. So they really don't help themselves.
I agree to an extent. It's a hard one. He is in the public eye, and you don't do anything, and then does it then set a precedent? Does it then sort of like, well, you didn't do this on David Moyes after I've said something? So there has to be something perhaps done, but I don't know if that's the right thing.
I can understand that position of saying we don't want to have it be a slippery slope. One person can say one thing, then someone else can say something else, and that something else being worse, but they can justify it by the lack of action taken beforehand. But at the same time, it is a case of it was settled between two private individuals. So I don't see why it needs to be any further than that. And it wasn't something he said in the public eye. He didn't go on camera to her whilst on camera on air. He didn't go off effing and blinding or anything like that. He said an off air that was still recorded, because they leave these things on, of course, but it was still not in the public eye. It was made in the public eye afterwards. Also, incidentally, it was made in the public eye after he had apologised and she had accepted it. So there's already been a resolved thing. It was a thing after that. This is people getting offended on someone else's behalf.
Could I make a counterpoint? With Andy Gray and Richard Keys, you know, I think it was generally the media, well, people were a lot more unanimous in thinking they should have been sacked for some of their comments. But they were off air, so, you know, were they okay or?
No, and one, for what they said was much worse. With him, it's a kind of a grey area.
Yeah, it was. I'm just saying because it was off air and it's...
Oh, yeah, in terms of it being off air. In terms of being off air, I think a lot of that is resolved by, one, it being a private issue because it was off air, but then two, it being an issue that was privately resolved. With Richard Keys and Andy Gray, it was not privately resolved. That, I think, being the key difference. This whole thing was kept private, and it was resolved privately with no issue at all. And it was made public, and it was made an issue after it had already been resolved. But I think is where my big problem is. As much as we want to sort of have generals and say, okay, you shouldn't be able to do these kinds of things, and so we're going to apply it to everything, you have to take a circumstance on its own merit and look at the situation and go, this unique situation, is this isn't the same as Richard Keys and Andy Gray or some equivalent to that thing. This isn't if we let this one go, going to set a precedent. Because this is clearly a private issue that has been resolved already. So I just don't see why anything needs to be made of it after that.
What I would have done if I was the FA was have just taken Moyes to one side and said, you know, we're not going to drag it into a hearing and all this sort of crap. But what we'd advise you to do is to come forward and make a 10 grand donation to a domestic abuse charity or something like that.
Yeah, that would have been the right response. It's saying, okay, it was a grey area, it was a fine line, not quite right, make sure you don't do anything like that again, but also make some kind of gesture. I think that's the best response, yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, no, I agree too, so it kind of ruins the debate. But personally, yeah, I don't think there should have been any serious action. But, yeah, I don't think there should have been any action.
That's me for coming up with a good idea that the FA should be.
Too practical for the FA, Richard.
I had an argument with some of my friends, actually, who are, well, one of them being a feminist, who are not football fans, but they said he definitely should be punished and, you know, disciplined, because at one point it was suggested he might get sacked, and they were saying that it was, that he wouldn't have said that to a man, and therefore it's sexist. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's a joke, to be honest.
Not for that reason.
I think you need better friends, Anthony.
I know. I need to meet up with you guys more and have proper football chats or something. I don't know. All right, I'll edit this out just in case. Listen. all right, we'll move on. There's just one other opening funny story, as we like to do. HMRC arrests. So people have been arrested at West Ham and at Newcastle for suspected tax and national insurance fraud. There's not a lot known about it. Obviously, they're not going to make any comments. It's an ongoing case. I don't know if you guys have got anything to say about it.
I know they've also raided Chelsea as well, but no arrests were done there.
Yeah, all I'll say on the whole thing, because obviously it's an open legal case and no one can really say anything about it, is if guilt is proved, if it's turned out these clubs have, you know, been guilty of it, it's not just a few individuals or a few bad eggs with the clubs, I hope they take it to the full extent of it. I can't remember how many years ago it was, but Swindon had it, and they got put down two divisions. They got demoted twice. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want to see a case where the FA, Premier League, or whoever is going, these are big clubs, they need protecting. They've got a lot of seats in their grounds, which will offers nicely. I don't want to see anything like that. If they are guilty, they need to be punished in the same way other clubs would, regardless of their size. That's all I'll say on that.
Okay.
Did Newcastle have a French owner before whilst it took over?
Actually, I don't know, to be fair. I don't know.
What I was under this understanding was from a Newcastle fan earlier was that it's more in relation to the documents when the previous owners had it under Mike Ashley.
I know that the French police were involved, but I don't know any more than that. So maybe. All right, we'll move on from our great opening stories section and move on to the first round of our quiz. So, Richard, you're this week's quizmaster, so over to you.
Okay, so after the rip-roaring success of one of my quizzes from a few weeks ago, I'm going to revisit that. And for those that were listening at the time, this is basically name the year in which the football club first came about. So for each one that I give you, your score for it will be the number of years out you are. And the person at the end of the round with the lowest score is the winner.
Okay.
Shane, that makes sense to you because you were in it last time.
I've done it.
All offense to you, Anthony.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. So for 20 years out, you get 20 points and then, yeah, fewer lowest score wins.
Yeah, correct on Monday.
Yeah, okay. That's fine.
So Shane can go first. You've got Leeds United.
Ooh, okay. I do know that they were one of the post-World War I clubs, so I'm going to go 1925.
You've got 6 points. They were exactly post-World War I. The 1 year after the 1919.
Oh, I was going to go 1920. I should have stopped with
that. You've got Newcastle United.
I think I'm really going to struggle on this quiz. Well, I know they have been around like since before the 90s, because I was around the 90s. I'm going to struggle with this. I'm just going to have to guess. 1930.
Yeah, they were 1892.
Okay, good start.
So you have 38 points.
My six is looking pretty good now.
Yeah.
Shame for you, West Ham.
Ooh. I swear I know this. I swear it's on like the club badge or something.
I've got a year in my head.
It's definitely below the 1900s, but I don't know how far. And I remember like the first one's like 1862 or something like that, I think. So I'm going to go with 1890.
You've got another 5 points. 1895.
I was thinking in my head it was 1896, I swear.
On 11, Shane, and Anthony's on 38. For your second one, Anthony, should have had Nick on for this one. Brighton and Hove Albion.
Don't know. 1905. I've got no idea.
That's the closest so far, actually. 1901.
Oh, wow. I'll take that.
I'm very lucky. I was going to go 1950 if that was me.
So. I thought Brighton were a lot more of a modern club.
Yeah. Turns out they got history.
That's you saying. Port Vale.
Oh, God. I've no idea. I reckon they seem like one of those clubs that everyone will think is really new, but actually they're really old. So I'm going to go for 80.
4 years out. They are very old. 1876. Back for you, Anthony. Ipswich.
It's better than getting that last one. I'd have probably got about 100 points. Ipswich. I think they're probably... Oh, hang on. No, they're not. I don't know. Summit was telling me then they were a founding member, but I don't think they were. 1930.
1876. It's 54 years out there.
I should have went with my first thought. Oh.
Right, so I've basically got to keep it within 100 years. Right.
Back to you, Shane, the other East Anglia team, Norwich.
Oh, I tell you what, I actually know this one. I know this one because my roommate is a Norwich fan. That's 1902.
1902 is correct.
Yeah, I know. I knew that one.
For you, Anthony, Swansea.
I'm terrible at this. Swansea.
This is the Eat Pound.
What the fuck is coming up later?
We're moving on to the continent shortly.
Oh, God.
I don't think we're doing any more rounds of the quiz after this. Swansea, 1952.
I don't feel like that's close.
1912.
That's not bad for me. That's only 40 years. I'll take that.
I don't even know what your score is now. I've given up. It's in several figures. You are actually worse than Chris. Shane, your last one in this round is Peterborough.
1950.
34. That's your worst one. 16 years out.
Hmm. Oh, that wasn't your last one.
Last one. Let's try and get in the right century on this one. QPR.
I don't really like QPR.
Oh, that's fine, you don't have to give an answer if you don't like them.
Doesn't matter if you like them or not.
I'm just trying to remember if there was anything on that sea of flags I saw when I was at Wembley and watching Derby lose to them in the playoff final.
I do know this one because I had a very long Football Manager career as QPR once.
What, did it go on from the start of QPR or...?
No, but you look up all of your club's details.
I don't. Maybe
you
I need to
look up your club's details. Otherwise, how can you do the press conferences?
I see, but I don't play Football Manager. If only I played Football Manager, I might know of you. Okay.
The only reason I've got a half decent of these.
I don't fucking.
Because like the start of the nine, like if you've built up a really good team, it's just approaching the end of 1939, and then all your players will go off and get shot.
No, it's only in 1914 they all died, because they all went off together, didn't they? Oh, Christ, I'm going to hell.
Really good. Oh, no.
1890.
Oh, only £8 on that one, 1882.
Yes.
I think we can comfortably say that Shane won that then.
Yay.
Congratulations, Shane. No, well deserved, I think. I don't think I can really argue. The only one I had a vague guess was West Ham, and you got that one. But yeah, anyway, yeah, well played, Shane. I didn't deserve to win, so yeah. So I want to talk about the FA Cup. Two semi-finals were played at the weekend. Chelsea beating Tottenham 4-2. That was a thrilling game of football, I thought. Hazard was dropped. Good squad rotation from Chelsea, you think?
It worked.
Yeah, it did.
Spurs were quite unfortunate. I thought that they played some decent football and Chelsea were just clinical.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Chelsea were better, really. I can't really put it any simpler than that. They played the game better. They weren't necessarily the better team on the pitch because I think Tottenham did actually play quite well, but they played much more to what the occasion was. Mm-hmm. They knew who they were playing against, they knew how they were going to play, and they knew how important it was to play at certain points in the game. They timed that a hell of a lot better. I think that's something the good clubs do. I think Juventus were a great example of that against Barcelona. Knew when to sit, knew when to press, knew when they needed to start controlling their game, and then knew when they could let Barcelona control it. Chelsea, for me, did the exact same thing against Tottenham. They laid off right when they knew Tottenham were not going to be at their strongest, and then they started pressing them when they knew Tottenham were going to be at their stronger points. So I think they just played the occasion a lot better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, I mentioned the point about squad rotation, the fact they beat Southampton yesterday. It's all looking pretty rosy for Chelsea at the moment.
Yeah, when you say beat us, what you should be saying is absolutely assaulted us. We were embarrassingly bad, I thought. Other people were watching that game going, oh, Southampton played quite well. Yeah, we do that every week. We play all right. We have some of the ball and do some nice passes, and then we concede four. Because we're not actually playing very well. We're just making it look quite nice. But Chelsea, credit to them, they were clinical. I think that FA Cup game was the one which decided which way the season's going to go. I could very easily have seen Tottenham pulling them back in if they lost that FA Cup game, because I think that would have been the momentum completely shift at that point. And then Chelsea would have really started to fell under pressure. And when you have that, if you go 1-0 down when you get down the game, that can really change the players' perceptions of how they need to perform. They can start panicking, and all of a sudden 2-0 down. But because they won that game, I think they had all the momentum. They went into that game against us, and we were potentially, you know, one of those clubs that can be a bit tricky, because we can sometimes control the game, we can sometimes play well, but they just breezed through, and it was that confidence and momentum they took into the game. I think I can't see them dropping the title now.
Just as a quick side note on Southampton, I saw that the manager, Claude Puel, said that that Oriol Romeu is not far off N'Golo Kante. It looks like someone rates Romeu as much as we do on the podcast.
Yeah, Romeu is quality. People forget about Romeu. He came from Barcelona. He came from their academy. He was playing games there, actually fair regularity, because he was there before Busquets, you know, came through there. He was a fairly regular player. Then he got injured, moved to Chelsea. The injuries continued. And at Chelsea, when he was not injured, he was playing games. It's not like he was not a player. And obviously, they thought this isn't going to work out, so they sold him to us. A lot of the time, people look at a player like that and they go, oh, he's nothing special. He's this big, bald lump. But technically, for a player who is essentially a wrecking machine in midfield, he's outstanding. He's probably our best passer in midfield, I'd say. I don't think we've got a better one. He's so composed on the ball in the way he passes the ball. But also, his tackling. His tackling is brilliant. His marking is brilliant. He can actually compete in the air. Now, it's something that when we had Wanyama, we didn't have, because Spurs fans will know this. He cannot jump at all. And he's very afraid of getting involved in the aerial challenges. For Romeu, he seems to relish that. He seems to love getting involved. He's got a hell of a work rate. He's quicker than people think. And he can actually push forward as well. I think if he was playing for a bigger club, doing the exact same performances he'd done for Saints, he'd be getting a hell of a lot more acclaim. And they'd be talking about him as well. He probably should be a sure thing for that Spain squad. He's been probably our best player this season, and by a distance.
I completely agree.
I saw the day, and just about it, that I sent over to you guys, like Herrera has outperformed Kante in pretty much all the key areas that everyone absolutely factor over Kante about.
What do you think of him winning the Player of the Year? Do you think that was right, or I presume not from what we've said?
I'd have given it to Hazard myself.
Agree.
On the one hand, yeah, I would have think Hazard this season is more deserving, but at the same time, we've got to remember this isn't voted for by a panel of experts. This is voted for by the players. They are basically unanimously agreeing who is our biggest pain in the arse this year. So that's either who stopped us scoring or who scored the most against us. I think I'd say it's well deserved from Kante. He probably shouldn't have won it. There probably were other players who were better than him this year. But it's also nice to see a non-attacking player win that award, because it can kind of show that we do appreciate those players in this country. We aren't all just about the attacking players, the goal scorers. I mean, we talk about it every year when it comes to the Ballon d'Or and things like that. And I'm ashamed that this defensive player or goalkeeper getting put in the mix. So I think we kind of need to sometimes put our money where our mouth is and say, actually, it's a damn good thing that player that's won it for once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. You like never seen La Liga that Busquets or Casemiro would get play of the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you wouldn't. Want to move on to the other semi-final. Arsenal winning that in extra time, 2-1 against Manchester City. From Arsenal's point of view, how big a win is that, you know, for the club, you know, for the side mentally, as well as, you know, literally being in the FA Cup final?
It's a weird result in that I imagine there's a large number of the Arsenal fans that probably didn't want to win. They probably saw that and think, shit, Wenger's going to sign again for another 2 years because of that.
I mean, I personally do reckon that the Wenger out brigade is a bit like left-wing supporters in modern politics. They're very loud, and you see them an awful lot, but they tend to actually be outnumbered in reality. I do think there's probably more, you know, we have the saying quiet Tories, I think we have quiet Wengerins, who just are not being particularly loud about it because they get shouted down. I don't think it's a majoritarian thing amongst the Arsenal fans. Yeah, there'll be a lot who are disappointed with that result because that would have been, you know, they'll be able to say, oh, we're not going to win anything this year, probably not getting top four. And if that's Wenger's entire thing, then he should go. But at the same time, if they end this season and they get a trophy, and then they're also in the Europa League, so they're not in the Champions League, and they don't have to put too much focus on it, they can finally, and again, it's a matter of putting their money where their mouth is, have a go at the Premier League without having the whole European distraction. Play the reserves in the Europa League if they don't really care about it. But play every single week their full-strength team. I personally do stand by my statement, that is the whole thing about not playing in Europe, because otherwise why does everyone try so hard to get into Europe? It's a bold argument for the people who are in it and just not doing very well. That's my opinion. But anyway, I think if they really want to try that, give Arsene Wenger one more season afterwards and say, right, no distractions, go for it.
Yeah.
I do worry for Arsenal that they would fall into the... For in the 90s, they were one of the two biggest clubs in the country. It was them and United fighting for the title most years.
Yeah.
If they get rid of Wenger now, are they going to basically do a like United did with Fergie? The grass is not always greener.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Wenger, for those years, with the shackles that they had when they went into the new stadium, it was having to offload players every year to City and Barca and bring in cheap replacements, and he was still managing to get third or fourth place every single season with them.
No, I agree completely.
It was the chairman that was putting these shackles on. It wasn't that he wasn't wanting to go out and buy a player or whatever. So I think he has to get a certain amount of credit for what he did over those years. And yeah, they could end up being stuck out of Europe now for several years if they get rid of Wenger and don't get the right man in.
I think for a lot of the Arsenal fans, they're saying, what he did in the past isn't really relevant. It's all about what's happening now. And here's the thing. Look at the Premier League at the moment. Look at the new managers who come into the Premier League. And you think, okay, how many managers in the Premier League could they get who would be better than Wenger? So, managers already managing it. I don't think there's many. I think they'd have to really take a chance on, one of the younger ones who's maybe up and coming, hasn't won anything yet. But look at Guardiola. He's coming to the City. He's going to finish this year without a single trophy, which is the best thing about Arsenal beating them. Probably he could finish outside of Europe as well, and he was supposed to be the best manager in the world. Jurgen Klopp, he's come into the Premier League, had some impact, but it doesn't really look like, being the kind of thing people talk about. Louis van Gaal came into the Premier League, massive reputation, hasn't really, he didn't do it. Even Mourinho struggling this time around. I think, who do they think they'll get, Arsene, who will be the best manager in the world, will come in and just instantly continue that success? Simeone, maybe.
There's a lot.
Delusional that some of the names of the
I just can't.
There's a lot of talk about Allegri.
I look at it and I think, even if they go out there and they get one of these big names, even if they manage to convince, Ancelotti, or they manage to convince Simeone, or one of these really big name managers to come in, at the same time, they've never managed in the Premier League before. They're going to be in this position, the same as all the other ones, where they've never managed a team that is going to be in such a competitive league. No easy games, not a single one of them. Every single one you're having to fight for. They're not used to it. I think it would be a real gamble to get rid of Wenger, frankly, at any point, especially if they don't have a clear succession plan. And I really don't think the grass is going to get in green. If the whole basis is what's he done in the past, it's actually what's going to be in your future if you do get rid of him. That would be a worry.
Well, there's a question about Ozil and Alexis Sanchez, whether they're going to sign new contracts, and they seem to be dithering, looking at who's going to be managing next season. If those two both come in and put in transfer requests, do you think that could force Arsenal's hand?
No, I don't think so, mainly because of the club itself has never been one to give in to player power. Doesn't matter how big the name was before, it's always been the case that if they want to go, off you go then. We're backing our people. If you don't want to be a part of it, you're in the out. And I don't think any player's bigger than the club. I don't think any player's not replaceable. Sanchez is a great talent. Ozil's a great talent. But there are other players out there that Arsenal could sign who are on a similar level.
Okay.
I think I'd
want to see Fabregasso. All them just, if they wanted to go, they went.
Yeah, it was as simple as that. You don't want to be part of what we're doing here, then fine. We don't want you to be a part of what we're doing here. Okay. They've never been a club to say, maybe if the players are going against the manager, maybe we've got a second now, even if it's really early days. They've always been a club that's stuck by kind of their principles on that account, and I do admire that. I think that is the right way of doing things.
Mm-hmm. I think it'd be nice if Arsenal could win the FA Cup this season, and if that, it'd be nice to see him leave, if he does leave on a high. The second and final round of this week's quiz. So over to you, Richard.
Okay, so we're moving on to the continent now, and we're going over to the lovely countries of Germany and France.
Okay.
So the first one for you, Anthony, a nice easy one for you.
What is the same? Is the same question? What year were they founded?
Yeah.
Oh right. Bayern Munich. Hang on. This is
now just to stipulate in these as well. This is when the football club was founded.
I was going to say because the Bundesliga celebrated like it's 50 years or something a couple of years ago, didn't it?
Oh yeah. Well, a lot of clubs were founded before the actual leagues were founded. Like the English clubs used to compete in the, like the FA Cup and stuff before the league came
so back. We're counting three Bundesliga is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Okay. Bayern Munich. Which you think English football was founded in the 1800s? I'll say 1905.
Very close, actually. 1900.
I'll take that.
5 points to you.
You'll have to actually keep a count this time, maybe. I might actually get close.
I
have not done a lot of German and French football manager career, so I might struggle.
German clubs are really quite hard because, you'll discover in a minute. Back for you then, Shane. Borussia Dortmund.
I swear it's on their badge.
Yeah.
It's BVB. Is it 1909?
It is.
At least no badges.
I know it's yellow.
Back for you, RB Leipzig.
Oh, in their cup. That's a sneaky one because
as the club RB Leipzig, I'm watching.
Because you could make an argument that they're new, but I don't know how long. Maybe they're one of them.
Well, it is I'm asking the question as the club RB Leipzig.
Okay. No.
The Rasenball.
Rasenball Sport, yeah. I don't know if they changed their name because Red Bull wanted to and they were sneakily getting around the rules. Right, you can laugh at me, I might get 100 points, but I'm going to say 2007.
You've got 2 points. Ooh. Well done.
I wasn't sure if it was some sort of trick because they were called like, there was a German team called Leipzig or, you know, something before.
They were formed from another club.
Yeah, that's what worried me.
It was a bold play and it paid off.
Yeah.
Back for you then, Shane. 1860 Munich.
1860.
That feels like a trick question. That feels like a trick question. 1860.
1899.
What the fuck?
As a sports club, they were formed in 1860. As a football club, they were formed in 1899.
If I lose this, it's because that German team are liars.
A lot of German clubs have the year they were formed in, apart from them. So you got 39 points there. You've got a chance here, Anthony.
I know.
I hate you.
Pretty excited.
Okay, for you, Anthony, Wolfsburg.
Mm.
You both remember what scores you're on, by the way.
What? No.
No.
Okay. Anthony, you're on 7.
That's not bad.
And Shane, you're on 39.
I got my first one bullseye as well. This is bollocks.
Yeah.
Wolfsburg is, I don't know. I get, they're probably an oldish team, I'd imagine. 1926.
19 years out. They were formed straight after the Second World War, 1945.
Mm-hmm. I'll take that.
So we'll move now over to France for Shane.
Yay.
PSG.
That's definitely not on their badge. I swear they're the more recent one. So I'm going to go for 1965.
Very close. 1970.
I'll take that.
Mm.
So you're on 44 now. Back to you, Anthony. Monaco.
Oh, okay. That's, again, a difficult one because they're a principality. Whether they always competed in the French League or not, I don't know.
I can give you a clue. No. They were founded in the year 2016.
Oh,
you're welcome.
Everyone started supporting them then, though.
I'll play safe. I'll go somewhere between the World Wars because that's safe. 1930.
A safe one there. 26 out,
24. Oh, wow. Wow. I'm amazed by that. I just thought it's somewhere safe, so if I'm wrong either way, I'll be all right. But...
So you're 33 now, and Shane's on 44.
This is close. I don't like it.
11 points between you both at the moment. But Shane's still got 2 to go.
Can I get a point if I can guess what club you'll give me?
Go on then.
Lyon.
Oh. Lyon is still on the list, but he's not the next one.
Ah, so close.
You've got Marseille.
Oh, that was going to be the one I was going to say. They're going to be old. 1900?
What's even want a point? That makes it worse for you.
A point off of it. 1900.
I love his point.
You've got a point, because they're 1899.
Yay! I got my point.
So you're now on 45?
So I need 10 or less to guarantee a win here.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you, the club that Shane just mentioned, Lyon.
All right. I'd imagine they'd be like a founder member or something. They seem like a historic. 1899.
Oh, you may have just snatched defeat from the jaws.
Yeah. How old are they?
1950.
I get fucked. I'm sorry, Anthony.
I can tell.
So do you say 1899? You've got 51 points.
I said 1939.
Nice effort.
Anyway, go on.
And the last one for you, Shane. As long as you're not 40 years out.
I was going to guess St. Etienne, but that's close enough.
Yeah. So, lose.
I'm going to go for, I reckon they're new. I'm going to go for 1975.
Yeah, that's close enough. 1970.
Okay.
I think I've been beaten there.
Shane keeps his founding club's trophy there.
And we don't
need... thank my mum, my dad, Jesus, several football... I don't want to thank 1860 München, they're liars. They almost just destroyed me. Thank God you got Lyon so wrong.
Did you have any idea about Lyon out of interest? Did you have any idea about Lyon or, well, any of these out of interest?
I thought they were quite new, actually, Lyon. I did think they were quite new.
Alright, fair enough.
I know in France it's almost backwards. The clubs you think are new are the clubs that are old, and the clubs you think are old are the clubs that are new.
Alright. I'll bear that in mind next time I'm in this sort of quiz. Thank you for that, Hiro. It was an interesting quiz, actually. I thought different.
I love that quiz. It's a great quiz.
I look forward to the next time we get to play it.
Well, I've got Spain and Italy already lined up for you.
Oh, lovely.
Excellent.
Cheers. I'll do some research. All right, so we'll move on from that. Just want to quickly mention it's obviously the Manchester Derby, City v United. A game that's going to have quite a big bearing on the top four. Which way do you see it going?
I have to be boring and say I think it'll be a draw.
Okay.
I think as much as people are going on, yeah, Mourinho, the whole tactical masterclass, beating of Chelsea and things, Man City being very defensively vulnerable, my instinct says both teams are not going to go into all guns blazing. It's a case of if they win, yeah, it can make their season, but losing it could lose one of those managers their jobs potentially. As much as everyone would say it would be ridiculous for Mourinho or Guardiola to lose it in a year, if even from end of the season without a trophy and without Champions League football, that really could be a death knell, because you think if it's any other manager apart from someone called Mourinho or Guardiola, they're going to get sacked after a year for that, most of clubs. So I think they'll both be a bit cautious. Oh, the linesman one.
That
doesn't really count.
I'd be happy with a draw. With the number of injuries that we seem to be getting at the moment, Pogba's been ruled out today for the game, and everybody mocks him, but you know, and the game's when he's turned up, he's
what are the odds of him turning up? No, I almost think that's, you know, we'd say everyone mocks him. I was just about to say that's probably a blessing in disguise given his current form.
Since he came back from the injury, his form's pretty decent.
The
game versus Chelsea.
I genuinely think in the last, and you can shoot me whatever, say what you like, but I think in the last 5 or 10 games, I think Marouane Fellaini's form has been better than Pogba's.
I'll not argue with you. I agree. I tell you what, it's as well as Fellaini, and I do think Fellaini has been actually very good recently. In fact, I'll stick my neck out and say I think he's actually been pretty good for United during his career there. He's just not been the kind of player United like, which bollocks to that, they signed the player they got. But either way, in one of these games, and I think you can almost take a leaf out of Ferguson's book, you don't want your best players. Sounds ridiculous, but you don't want your star players where all the cameras going to be on, they know they've got to go and get 3 goals, otherwise no one's going to care. You don't want those players, you want your squad players. You want your consistently will play in those big games, your 8 out of 10 players.
Mm-hmm.
Ferguson used to do it all the time when it came to a big, cleverly, Nani, you're not playing regularly. But our big games, you're in those ones, because he knows they're performing. They don't have to be the big players. I think not having a player like that will make United play in a different way. If you're putting someone like Fellaini in midfield instead of Pogba, you're naturally going to be a little bit more reserved, a little bit more defensive. you're not going to be as inclined to, you know, not just have an individual do something stupid, but have an entire team that's got that mentality now of, right, we're not at our strongest now, so we've got to play smart. Not hard, smart. Mm-hmm. I think that's what you need in those big games. And if United can harness that, because I think they've got more of those types of players than City. You've got players like Valencia, Young. These are your players who are your 7-8 out of 10s every game at the moment this season. And you want them playing regularly, and they are. And I think if they can get all those players together and they can go with the right mentality, they'll beat the City side. I do think it will end up being a draw, because I think both sides will sit up a little bit too much and only start really hammering it down in the first 10 minutes and the last 10 minutes. But you want to know, with a very long period in the middle of the game, where it all gets a bit dull. But I think if United can approach this in the right way, and you know, without players like Pogba, then I think they can go and get a result. I think they would be favourites if they can do that.
Mm-hmm. I think if they did get a result tomorrow, then it throws open that top four spot, or even third. Because Liverpool are shocking at the moment.
Yeah, it does seem like a weird thing, though, and I know I've probably mentioned this on previous weeks, but it seems like an odd thing when United and City, under the management of Guardiola and Mourinho, are sides competing for fourth. It just doesn't quite feel right. I feel like this should be like a title fight this season. But it's not, and I think that kind of goes to show just how competitive the Premier League is. If a manager like Guardiola can't come in and conquer the world of that City team, which is outstanding, and a manager like Mourinho can't come into the United team, spend the kind of money they've been spending and not conquer, it's a testament to how tough the Premier League is. And I think this is a game where people are going to be talking about the stars, they're going to be talking about the big players, but what you really want to focus on is the small details, because that will make and break it. All of the big spectacle stuff that's going to be on Sky Sports News and all of that stuff, that's irrelevant. It's the small details that make this one. It's the smaller players that will make this one. And I think in a weird way, even though I do say it's a draw, I think United are favourites, because they've got more of that. They're better at that than City are.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I certainly say I should have a better squad than City's.
I think with you've got Zlatan out as well, so it'll be Martial or Rashford, possibly both in attack after Martial's performance. And, you know, playing that counter-attacking style as well, like they did against Chelsea, may suit them tactically. Yeah, I'm sure it'll be an
excellent. We'll give Wayne the final send-off.
All right, I just want to finish.
I mean, I'll take a bicycle kick.
I just want to finish with a couple of polls that we've done on Twitter over the past week. Our Young 11 continues. Anthony Martial was second in the previous poll, so he gets a second shot at it. And he was against Ademola Lookman, Nathan Redmond and Raheem Sterling for the second attacking midfield slot. Before I reveal the winner, who would you two have gone for out of those four?
Personally, I know I'm probably going to get slated for this, but I'd go for Martial. Mm-hmm. I know I should be saying Redmond because I'm a Southampton fan, but unfortunately, familiarity does breed contempt, and as much as I know Redmond can be great at this day, I know he can be off for an entire season at the same time.
Mm-hmm. I'd say Redmond has had a better season. I'd say overall, though, which player has got the highest glass ceiling? Martial by a mile.
Yeah. What about Raheem Sterling? Do you not think he's got a serious shout?
Yeah, I wouldn't have him too far. I'd probably put him just slightly behind Martial.
Okay. Yeah, I'd say if I was doing a vote myself, I'd have, you know, Martial on 4 points, Sterling on 3, Redmond on 2. I think, I think Sterling has really coasted under the radar this season. From a season he's had, he's been outstanding. He's been one of City's better players.
You never bet it when he's one-on-one with a keeper, but...
yeah, but it, as a winger, I think, especially if City can start to play more as a winger, an actual proper winger on the right-hand side, going down the line, trying to get balls in, trying to bamboozle the defence, that's where he's best at, and that's where he's been outstanding at this season. If England can do that as well, then we'll have a proper player on our hands.
Personally, I'd have voted Martial, but I'm amazed. I'll give you the results now. So Lookman got 7% in fourth place. Sterling only got 21%. Personally, I thought he'd absolutely walk it. Martial got second place, 33%, which means Nathan Redmond, the winner, with 39%.
I mean, V2 Football Podcast does seem to be a bit like Arsenal with polls. It's always a Southampton player. It's always remaining. It's always someone like Redmond. I tell you what, he was abysmal the first half of the season. And a lot of other football fans, they looked at Redmond and they thought, oh, he looks like a really good little player. You know, he's quick. He's scoring a few goals here and there. He's getting the odd assist. And they're going, oh, isn't he great? What they weren't watching was all the other games he plays in when he's not on TV and he's just generally crap. Giving the ball away every single time, costing us goals. Not just not scoring, but he's losing the ball, not tracking back, and then we're conceding from it. That happened so often in the first half of the season, but I'll give him credit. He has stepped up his game so much in the second half of the season, and it's exactly when we've needed it, because we have declined. in the second half of the season. We've gotten a lot worse. So we've needed a few of those players to absolutely pull us up. And Redmond's been definitely one of those players. The other one being Gabby Adini, and Virgil van Dijk unfortunately got injured. But yeah, he has looked brilliant. And there's signs of he could be very good. Mm. Not just, you know, all right. I mean, if he consistently doing what he does on his best days, he would be, and I know this is going to sound ridiculous, but I think on the same kind of level as Sané. Because he's doing the exact same kinds of things. He's exact same ability. He's getting the same goal scoring positions and he's taking them. That is where he could be if he can want to do it consistently. Will he be able to do that at Southampton? I think it's a question about that. I don't feel like I'm a bad fan to say that. We've seen other players leave the club and do terribly, but we've seen other players go on and do a hell of a lot better. And they've actually started to perform more consistently. Mane being an example I really don't like admitting. But I think he does have a lot more potential than people give him credit for. I think maybe because he's come up the route of, you know, being a championship player, being a bit, you know, hot and cold, that people maybe don't think of him quite as much in terms of being one of the best players. But I think the poll has shown that he's kind of turned that opinion around a bit. And yeah, he could be very good, but at the same time, it is just a case of this could be as good as he gets.
Mm-hmm. I like Nathan Redmond, but yeah, I wouldn't have voted him, but that's another question. Performance of the week, Christian Benteke won that with 51% of the vote. He beat Tom Carroll, Nemanja Matic and Mark Pugh. Personally, I think that was the right decision, but what do you two think?
Can't disagree. He destroyed Liverpool and I love watching Liverpool lose. Yeah, I'm happy with that.
All right, that's a little simpler. And then the final poll, who has the most annoying face? It's still open at the time of recording, but right now it's 54% to Sergio Busquets and 46% to Ander Herrera. Yeah,
I can't believe that. Guys, you're not voting on who's the more annoying player. Yes, that's Busquets. Whose face is more annoying? Look at his face is tiny for his head. He's just got such annoying... Tell me you don't want to punch his face. Come on, guys.
And on that note, I think that's the end of the show. Tell me you don't want to punch Herrera's face.
It's angelic. He's got a little baby face.
Oh, I want to punch it so hard.
To be fair, even as a United fan, he does kind of... When you see a referee give a decision against him, he does get in the referee's face a bit, and his face does look very punchable there. But I also despise Busquets more, and I would love to deck him. I don't know.
We are all aware we'd lose these fights.
I would lose for it. I would probably go Jamie Vardy.
Ooh, that's a good shout. That's a very punchable face.
Okay, well, we're gonna talk off air more about punchable faces. yeah, thanks for joining me tonight. You can follow us on Twitter at V2Football and check out our website, v2football.com. It's good night from me and good night from our guest. Fuck's sake. Sorry about that. I was going to say something and I've forgotten. Oh, fuck's sake. What was I going to say? Oh, that was it. Okay, sorry. I'll repeat that. All right, well, I think we've reached the end of the show. You can follow us on Twitter at V2Football. Check out our website, v2football.com. Also, I'd recommend checking out this week's episode of the 72 show. We're joined by Nick Tanner, who was probably one of the best guests we've ever had. I've got a hell of an editing job before it's released, but yeah, really good show that. It's good night from me and good night from Shane Lees and from Richard Hero Hudson. Good night.
Good night.